On today's episode of The Glue Guys, we are going to discuss the greatest guard in the history of NBA basketball, nay, of all basketball time, Jeremiah Martin.
Okay.
The Nets matchup against the Toronto Raptors. And Shams Charania report from The Athletic that the Nets are considering many names.
a person with many. No, that's actually apt in a lot of ways. No, keep that.
That the Nets are considering many different people for the Nets head coaching position, including Jason Kidd?
Including the man with many names. Jason Kidd? I don't know. Let's get to the show.
Welcome back to The Glue Guys. This is Mike, your sailor, Brian.
Hello.
Check us out on Twitter at BK Glue Guys, netsdaily.com, The Athletic. To get 40% off an annual subscription to The Athletic, go to theathletic.com/glueguys. And you should, because partly what we're going to talk about today is Shams Charania's report of all the big names that the Nets are considering. And it's the type of report that you can only fully read if you get a subscription to The Athletic. Brian, how are you?
Good. I went to the source on that one. I got my source materials on the Shams article. Shams.
You do lose something. I mean, people should know this, but you do lose something when things are aggregated, when things are quoted secondhand. There are words that are lost. There's context that is lost. And I will get to the most interesting line in the whole piece when we talk about it. But first, teasy, teasy, teasy. Jeremiah Martin. What is going on here?
Wait,
we're leading the show
on
with Jeremiah Martin.
Well, yeah. Why are we doing that?
Well, I wanted to lead the show with it because I think Brian was the first human on planet Earth to identify Jeremiah Martin as a talent. And I remember distinctly after the very first minutes that Jeremiah Martin got in the bubble, you declared like that he was a talent.
Stamp of approval, you know. When you get the gift, Mike, you can't keep it in long, you know.
And we sit here. I mean, Nets Twitter has been ablaze with Jeremiah Martin hot takes. That his defensive rating in the three games that he's played in the bubble is the greatest of all time for any guard, basically ever.
Checks out. And I'm only being like 65% ironic when I say that checks out. There's a big piece of, I'm carrying a torch for Jeremiah among the others.
He's been interesting. I mean, we'll only talk about him for a very short period of time, but I think the thing that absolutely does stand out is there's a great bounce to his game and a buoyancy, athleticism that is impressive for a guard that we've never cared about in our whole lives. I think it speaks to the larger sort of ethic of Sean Marks that even though we're in this KD Kyrie atmosphere, the bubble experience with the replaced Nets has been fun because it goes back to the roots of what the Sean Marks, Kenny Atkinson, build it from the ground up culture was, which is discovering these uncut gems. Safety Brothers film, popular film. Just got a meeting update. Anyways, it's been a delight to watch the replaced Nets because of guys like Jeremiah Martin, Chris Chioza, John and Musa getting run, Dante Hall getting in the face of Giannis Antetokounmpo. Jeremiah Martin looks like a real player. Now, the Nets are going to have a glut of guards next season. And, you know, he is on a two-way contract also for next season. So can the Nets just hold on to him in that sense? Or is he so intriguing already that he's going to get plucked away? I don't know. But it's a nice indicator that at least there is still space within the Nets ecosystem to find our guy, Jeremiah Martin, who has been a baller. And also, by the way, he is someone who has been in these scrimmages with Kevin Durant when Kevin Durant was trying to come back for the season until he decided not to come back. KD has seen himself some Jeremiah Martin. Maybe he likes him and maybe he will be part of the team. Brian.
Michael.
Toronto Raptors.
Oh, Toronto Raptors.
I think there's a chance that our Brooklyn Nets could beat the Toronto Raptors in a series only because this situation is so strange.
Wow.
Now, of course, I'm not predicting that. There's no reason to predict it. The Raptors are, besides the Suns, maybe the best team in the bubble. They've been the most impressive team for sure, even though they got shellacked by the Boston Celtics, and the Boston Celtics turn around and lose to the Washington Wizards, the Isak Bonga Washington Wizards. But I'm telling you, folks... Folks, listen to me. This is Radio Mike here. Folks, gentlemen, ladies, everyone out there, it's going to be a weird playoffs, and it won't be chalky. The team's chalky is a term. Do you know what the term means, chalky? It means typically the favorites win. It's a term used most in March Madness, is if you're like filling out a bracket and you say all one seeds will go to the Final Four, that's a chalk bracket. Not really sure the etymology. Entomology?
A chalk bracket. So something that is chalky means that it's not like chopped up with chalk. It means that it's... I'm confused about what the... Getting
why?
Me too
why? Yeah, because chalk, if you're writing in chalk, it's very washable.
Right.
Very
erasable. I would say that it was chalky if a lot of one seeds were getting upset. Because then you're like, oh, this goes here now all of a sudden, and this now I got to do this.
Crossing out lines on a board.
Yeah, right?
I hate it. I don't know. Did you hate the feeling of writing on chalk on a board? There's something like the scratchiness of it. Is this just me? Was I alone in this?
A lot of people feel that's very dry. I mean, styrofoam, you know my feeling about styrofoam. It's like if I open up a box and it's full of styrofoam, it's like a box of snakes, box of cobras. Get it away from me, you know?
You're Indiana Jones falling through the hole.
It is my kryptonite. I can't even look at styrofoam.
Yeah, and obviously the environmental aspect of it all.
And that's really what it's about. You know, that's what motivates most of it.
Is it true that if you break styrofoam in half, it damages the environment? I was told at a young age that every time styrofoam was broken in half, like particles would be released into the atmosphere and damage, you know, our, what's the thing that protects the earth from the sun?
The ozone layer?
Remember the ozone layer?
Yeah, we just call it the atmosphere now. We used to call that, we used to have a real name for that.
The ozone layer?
Yeah, we got rid of it.
Brooklyn Nets. Yeah. No, I do think it matters. Like, we just need to be prepared that the Jeremiah Martin, Chris Chioza-led Nets could cause some damage. There will be a team, you know, it'll probably be the Portland Trailblazers if they get in and they play the Lakers, who don't have any guards.
What do you mean if they get in? They're not getting in. Mike, we're about to dunk on them in 6 hours. What are you talking about? Get in.
Yeah. I should date ourselves because most people are going to be listening to this podcast over the weekend. But as I tweeted out from the @BKGlueGuys Nets account, or @BKGlueGuys Twitter account, Dame Lillard, who everyone loves and I love, even though Earl Watson thinks the media doesn't love Dame Lillard. Damian Lillard said after beating the Mavericks in very dramatic fashion that this next game coming up against the Nets is the most important game of all of our lives. And I was like, shit, the Nets are probably not ready for that energy.
Jeremiah is ready for that smoke. Trust.
He's coming through.
Trust.
Big trust. Yeah. We can do a really thorough Toronto Raptors. Like I was digging into the stats of the Raptors, and it's actually frightening when you look at the statistical makeup of the Raptors. They are one of the best three-point shooting teams. They are one of the best at defending the three. They are one of the better defensive teams in the NBA. I think they're the second best defensive team. So it's like all of these things don't look good for...
Can I also add one of the more qualitative intangible arguments on top of it? Because I've made this argument last episode about like context being really important in terms of people's motivation for winning basketball games. You know, the bubble has, in my opinion, blown a lot of that up for people's their internal narratives, which is why I think you're going to see a lot of those teams at the top maybe underperform in the first rounds. I think the Toronto Raptors are one of the few, you know, top bracketed teams who actually smell blood in the water, have already felt like they've been snubbed, you know, all season long as the champions that lost their best player, who are like not really like, you know, they'll be competitive but not contenders to win anything meaningful. And now I think they see a real inroad. Speaking of chalky, this is something you put on the chalkboard right here. You know, this is our opportunity to actually, you know, have a championship run suddenly, because, you know, we saw Milwaukee lose to the Nets. You know, we saw a bunch of crazy stuff happen. That it makes a lot of sense that, like, you know, if you're the Los Angeles Lakers, the Clippers, the Bucks, you're looking at this season like, this is a weird season. I don't like this bubble situation. I really wish that we were just back at home so we could win a championship on our home court. And Toronto's thinking like, this is sweet. I think we got a chance here. that's the context I'm talking about.
They're thinking, this is great. We're out of the hellhole that is Canada.
Canada.
Terrible country. We're glad we're in Orlando's a better, as bad as Orlando is, it is better than Canada.
Barfing up a pile of poutine. Poutine? What do you call it?
I've heard poutine. Poutine? Recently. I've always heard it was poutine. And then I was watching like Bon Appetit, which I apologize for because I know like times aren't great at Bon Appetit video right now, but they were calling it poutine, which shocked me. I frankly, it also links back to Canada. You know, there's been this thing, it's not a rivalry between the Nets and Raptors, but there's been series over the years between the Nets and Raptors. And we're going to talk about Jason Kidd. The one series that Jason Kidd won for the Nets as a coach was against a Raptors team that probably still should have beaten the Nets team that was presented forward, which was the KG Paul Pierce team.
Yeah, the Nets have a weird history of beating the Raptors in the playoffs, actually. This goes even back to, I think, 2007? I don't know. I should have checked. But we did win a sneaky first round in Toronto, I think as a sixth seed back then, and then we lost to Cleveland. Somebody fact check me on that. But.
Please. And obviously Vince Carter, the curse of Carter.
Right. Was broken.
Going from the Raptors to the Nets, a true curse of Carter. I totally agree with you that the one contender, and the Raptors are a contender that you don't want to play, are the Raptors right now. The Lakers are very weird. There's a weirdness going around. LeBron James said like last week that there's something going on outside the bubble that he can't control that's having an impact on the team. It was very strange, and we're not really sure what it was. The Clippers are always going to be weird just because Kawhi is at the center of them. Paul George is getting in a fight with Damian Lillard. The whole team overall is just can be disjointed. And the Bucks haven't really been playing all that great in the bubble. And I do think over a seven-game series, like the better talent, of course, should win. A team like the Lakers or the Bucks will become more locked in within that moment. But I think there's definitely a scenario where like the lower seeded teams will get a couple of wins to start the series, and the better teams will win four straight and finish it off quickly after that. The Raptors are the one team, as you said, where they are the high class underdog. They're like someone born with $100 million in their bank account, but still feels like they have something to prove.
Sort of Trumpian, you know? in a lot of ways.
Yeah, the Raptors are Donald Trump.
Yeah.
President Trump. Right. Okay, excuse me. Yes. And they will drive the NBA down
right
into a sinkhole.
Can we just briefly give myself some credit here? Yes. For just blithely nailing that the 2007 first round of the NBA playoffs was a sixth seed New Jersey Nets whooping a third seed Toronto Raptors in six games. Okay. So this
amazing.
This goes back a long ways, us and the Raptors. Okay, Mike?
If I'm going to do like the Nets win this playoff series, if I'm going to play this game.
Oh, okay.
This is the picture I'm going to have to construct for you. All right. Okay.
I'm excited.
There's a couple things that have to happen. All right. Caris LeVert has to be bonkers insane.
Best player on the court. Better than Pascal, whatever.
Caris LeVert, he has been 25-5-5 consistently in the bubble before going to the bubble in March. And Alex Schiffer had this in his story on The Athletic. And you can read that story by going to theathletic.com/glueguys, and you get 40% off an annual subscription to The Athletic. Caris LeVert was 27-6-6 in March, 25-5-5 in the bubble now. And he's been an obvious like all-star talent, all-star production, and he'll need to raise his game to another level. The second thing that definitely needs to happen is that Joe Harris cannot have a single bad shooting game. We need like the 7-for-12 from three Joe Harris, or a 6-for-11 from three Joe Harris. Every game, because I don't know if people remember, but Joe was pretty bad in the Sixers playoff series last year. He couldn't hit a shot.
The bright lights were blinding Joe Harris, true boy. Yeah,
we just need Joe Harris from the regular season, what he normally is in the regular season. So you need top-level Caris LeVert, the very top-level Caris LeVert. You need Joe Harris to do what he needs to do. And then you kind of just need like incredible random performances from name anyone. Chris Chioza, you need like a 25-point Gary Temple game. You need Jared Allen to really continue to be like an 8-assist center. you need to be Nikola Jokic light. So you need all of that mix. And all season long, the reason why the Raptors weren't getting the credit that they promptly deserve is because if you do stack up the talent, it's not all that impressive. Like collectively, they're this really, like, you know, Detroit, Pistons, Chauncey Billups, Rasheed Wallace, Tyshawn Prince, Richard Hamilton, Rip Hamilton, excuse me, type unit. Altogether, the each of them individually, all combined, is greater together than they would be individually on the market. But this is going to be, I'd rather play the Bucks, frankly, at this point. As good as the Bucks have been, as much talent as the Bucks have, the Bucks seem off. I'd rather have played them, but the Nets don't have
it's funny to be saying that now. Yeah.
It does go that way.
Yeah.
How deathly afraid, like the doomsday scenario was that the Nets couldn't tank, but they were an eighth seed to play the Bucks. And now the Bucks just feel.
It's also like that we won that one game, and like all of a sudden I was like, who, like Pat Connaughton? Get out of my face. Connaughton? That's not a real name. Get out of here. You're not a person.
I like this bit.
Yeah.
Of
just mispronouncing people's.
Mispronouncing names. Totally disrespectful, too. I think it's good. I think it's a good bit. What are you thinking about for this Raptors? Like, what's the confidence level? What do you really want out of it? I guess that's the thing. It's like, what do we want to see? What would be considered a success? I think beating the Raptors is an extremely tall order, of course. So we should be kind of realistic. And it's like, what do we want to see out of this series? What would be a good thing where everyone could feel hearty and happy going into KD, Kyrie 2020-2021 season?
For me, the first game of the Sixers series from last year was one that gave me like a lot of hope in Kenny Atkinson's initial strategic ability. You know, like I remember going into that game, not sure of what I was going to see. And then afterwards, if you remember, we like completely, you know, held court the entire game for game one of last year's playoffs. We went and unpacked that game, and there was like, I don't even remember what the strategies were, but they were like obviously sort of like pre-thought, prefabricated, implemented perfectly. What I'm looking for in the Jacques Vaughn-led Nets of the bubble is some of that. Basically, I just want to see from game to game, can he actually make those types of adjustments? Can we keep it competitive on any level going deeper into the series? You know, what I don't want to see is us just sort of like getting trounced the first two games and then deciding we want to like, I don't know how many like, you know, 37-minute nights we want to give Caris LeVert after we like lose our first two playoff games. You know, that's, I mean, we could definitely peter out of this playoff series if we're not careful. What, you're giving me a strange look.
No, I agree with you. I was saying yes under my breath because I was agreeing with you.
Yeah. But I would like to like get a sense of Jacques Vaughn because he's obviously been incredibly intriguing. And I don't know if he's been intriguing enough that it's like the job is his to be had. If we take this Raptors to six or seven games, that's another really nice data point.
Yeah, and obviously, to continue to tease, we will discuss Jacques Vaughn's viability via the Shams Charania story that we got. So, well, I will dive deep into Jacques and what he may need to do to really secure this job, and there's a lot of momentum for that. I totally agree with you that it's like, it needs to be a full effort for the entire series, even if it's four games. I don't really want to see Jeremiah Martin start in game four when the Raptors are up 3-0. And I really don't think it's going to be a sweep because what a strong take. The true talent gap between the Raptors and Nets isn't as significant as it would be between the Nets and the Bucks. The Raptors are playing way better. They are a more cohesive team than pretty much anyone else in the NBA right now. Again, besides, miraculously, the Phoenix Suns. You know, it's a really difficult series, but there are gaps that, you know, you could exploit. If Caris LeVert shows, if he just does what he's been doing the regular season, if he's 25-5-5 in the playoffs, that could answer the final question of who is the Nets' third star. Like, if we use the data point from last playoffs, where he was the best player against the Sixers, and then what he's been in March and in the bubble, and then if he goes into the playoffs against one of the best defensive teams in the league, the reigning champions, a team that have all of those wing defenders that they have, from Siakam to OJ Anunoby, Van Vliet, even though he's on a wing, but he's one of the better defenders, Kyle Lowry, one of the better defenders at guard, and then they have, again, they still have Serge Ibaka and Marc Gasol. It's just a stacked defensive roster. If Caris LeVert can still produce in that environment against, and he's going to be the entire focal point. Everyone loves Nick Nurse now. Coach of the Year Nick Nurse is the thing that we most discuss. Coach of the Year Nick Nurse. I imagine I could call Nicholas right now and say to him, you got to stop Caris LeVert. And if you do that, you beat the Nets in four. And I think he probably understands that. He doesn't need me WeChatting him that. But if LeVert can produce and produce somewhat efficiently against the Raptors, that's going to prove a tremendous amount. And he's becomes third star Caris LeVert. He no longer is no legs LeVert. He is Caris hashtag the third star LeVert. And that would be a huge indicator. And of course, like, can Jared Allen continue to play well? Like, is he like the guy? Like, can Joe Harris bounce back from the last playoffs? Is Chris Chioza the next great point guarders? In fact, Jeremiah Martin. There's a lot of things that we can discover.
We do know a lot about our players as it's currently constructed. Like, Jared Allen's ceiling is slightly less up for debate. It's mostly about, like, we're learning that, hey, if you give Jared Allen more minutes, consistent minutes, like, his numbers go up. Wow. Wowie. You know, crazy. And similarly, if you give Caris LeVert all the touches in the world, can he be efficient in that time? Seems like he can be. You know, can he lead that to two or three playoff wins? That's, I guess, an interesting question. I mean, that's what it's important to also, like, check in on this too, because, you know, setting realistic expectations, people might be like, hey, you guys are being, like, sort of sad and dour about this. Like, what's up with that? And I think it's, like, totally plausible that, like, we suddenly win the first two games or something stupid like that. And then we have to remember to reality check that, like, hey, like, we were coming in hoping for 6 or 7 game series. So let's not, like, let that get away from us. Because I feel like it's, we have a tendency to do that, especially in Netsland. Especially in Netsland.
I thought when you said we're coming in, we should come in knowing that. I thought you were going to go with, like, the Nets wanted to tank, not the Nets wanted to.
Oh, right.
To,
well, yeah, there's that too. The whole context of it is...
Let's rewind back just three weeks ago.
Yeah, true.
Everyone was like, can the Nets tank? Can they do it? Can the Wizards overtake them?
Because they're not going to win two games. And here we are. We're about to snuff the Portland Trail Blazers playoff hopes in one fell swoop. And then what? We'll be, what, 7-2? So 6-2? Where are we?
It'll be 6-2. That would be the bubble run, and then there'll be an oral history of the Nets, the replaced Nets bubble run, and then eventually there will be a Disney Plus movie.
Do you think they'll let us do the voice for that podcast?
the voice of the podcast in or the oral history or in the Disney Plus show?
In the Disney Plus show. Speaking of which,
they'll probably get someone else to do it.
Rats.
Speaking of getting someone else to do it, here's something you can do yourself.
Oh.
Manscaped.
You can also get somebody else to do it too.
Yeah, that's true. So I should, you can both get someone else to do it or you can do it yourself.
Put a finer point.
You know what's amazing about Manscaped? So if you don't know, Manscaped is the premier place to go if you need, it's in the name, your manscaping needs, right? If you need to get your summer body right. And I kind of take umbrage as, even though they're sponsors, you know, this talks a lot about getting your summer bod right. And that's timely. And in advertising, you know, I'm rewatching Mad Men, Brian, like you did recently.
Are you?
Advertising's a lot about, you know, seizing the moment, right? And it is summer, and that's the moment. But I think you should be 24/7, 365, scaping your man bod. You know, I think that's important. What Manscaped can really do for you, and they have this thing that's called the Perfect Package, which is the Perfect Package 3.0 kit, which comes with the Essential Lawnmower 3.0. It's a waterless, cordless body trimmer, and they bring you a ton of other liquid formulations to run out your manscaping routine. And when I thought about that, waterproof, you know, I was thinking of a Harry Houdini.
Okay.
You know, Houdini famously, and I don't even know if this is true, but I think he did. He's the guy who puts himself in a box of water, right? And gets out, and he's chained up, you know, he's chained up in a straitjacket, and he gets out of that box of water, right? Yeah. That's his thing.
That's
one of his things that he does.
One of those deals. Yeah.
Okay. So Houdini could have himself gone into the box of water, the clear glass box of water, in a straitjacket, chained up, and he could have been given the lawnmower 3.0 because it's waterproof. He could have manscaped himself while also getting out of the straitjacket and the chains and the box of water. Because it's waterproof, he still would have been able to do that. I mean, that's magic. That's real magic, is manscaping yourself while in a straitjacket, in chains, underwater. And that's what Manscaped can do for you. And here's something special, Brian, I'd like to tell you about.
Please, yeah.
If you get the Perfect Package, you will also, for a limited time here, subscribers can get two free gifts, the Shed Travel Bag, $39 value, and the patented high-performance reduced chafing Manscaped Boxer Briefs, plus 20% off and free shipping if you use the code THEATHLETIC20. So get 20% off and free shipping with the code THEATHLETIC20 at manscaped.com. You get two free gifts, the Shed Travel Bag, $39 value, and the patented high-performance, anti-chafing, Manscaped Boxer Briefs. Go to manscaped.com today and use code THEATHLETIC20. Brian, should we talk about the Nets coaching? certain.
Oh, gosh. Yes, please.
We got a intriguing bit of news from Shyam Charania of The Athletic, and you can read that story if you go to theathletic.com/glueguys, which laid out five names that are being considered right now for the Nets coaching search. And the five names are Jason Kidd, Ime Udoka, Ty Lue, Jeff Van Gundy, and of course, Jock Vaughn, who will get serious consideration. Now, we'll go through a list of names, but to me, a lot of heart, a lot of people feeling feelings on Twitter.
You know
about
what I hate?
One person's name.
Poor Jock Vaughn is that who we have to say will be given serious consideration, which is such a bad position to argue from. Really bad.
Jason Kidd is kind of the name that ignited.
It's a meme. That's a big meme.
People's hearts. And when you see Jason Kidd's name attached to a Nets coaching search, how do you feel?
Well, I think I feel a complicated range of emotions, Mike. And I'm not sure that I'm not going to be able to articulate it really well is my main concern while I talk about this on the podcast. I'm going to give it a try. We'll see what comes out. It is easy to say that like Jason Kidd created just discord in the Nets franchise in hindsight. But also, Mike, we learned a lot about the the discord that was already there, that had been fomenting under his feet years in advance of his tenure there. And one version of looking back on that is to say, well, he saw the dysfunction firsthand, didn't like do a whole whistle blow on, hey, this is dysfunctional. Just, you know, he moved his business elsewhere. He just picked up and moved. That's sort of like how he works, right? He's very decisive, I would say, about Jason Kidd, maybe in terms of like, or maybe not. I don't know if that's the right way to say it, but like, it seems like he's very quick about deciding what's in his best interest, and then like isn't really concerned about any perception or ramifications in the wake of that decision. There's that part of it, right? He did 1 year. That was a really crazy year. A really crazy year. But when things were going really bad, we were 10-21, and he righted that ship. We won a stupid one playoff series, and that was the height of that doomed operation. When they were playing the best basketball, it was because of a rotation that he designed that was a very modern take on basketball. It's hard to say that that wasn't the like a difficult decision to make, also the best one for that particular organization at the time. Goes on to Milwaukee. And I think a lot of people attribute the lack of success there in those first years and the current success to the fact that Jason Kidd and Joe Parenti, to a lesser extent, didn't know what to do with the assets that they had and had underperformed. And now it's one of the most effective teams in basketball, blah, 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 blah. So it's complicated, Mike. Is he a guy that can fit the parts, you know, make everything operate? Well, is he this deceptive force that's like playing politics in Los Angeles and in Brooklyn? And I almost said New Jersey because it's Jason Kidd, you know, it's so connected, so deep connected. my thing with Jason Kidd is that he's a bit of a chameleon in all the senses, and he's great for a podcast because it's, you know, super fun to argue about what his motivations for doing anything are, what his intentions are, if he's actually good or not, because he's so good at sort of skirting the blame and, you know, so on and so forth. If there's blame coming down the pike, he'll just like, boop, I'm off to the next team. Like, no blame for me. So it's a complicated figure, obviously a beloved Nets player who himself had a complicated deal with what it was always like sort of like a hostage on the Nets, right? He was constantly being threatening to go to San Antonio and everywhere else. So this is like part of the relationship with Jason Kidd forever. Does any of that answer, is he a good coach? Which is up for debate. It's still very much up for debate.
Probably not.
But he's had moments, right? I don't know.
So I'll go positives on Jason Kidd is that as a player, I mean, obviously incredibly high IQ, right? Like he, what made him so gifted was he was physically gifted, but he also understood the game at a certain level that very few guys ever truly understood the game. He has that in him, and players from a certain era respect him. Yes, Brian.
Can I add one bit to that too?
Please.
He was one of the best players at evolving his game to the shape of his body over time. Like he ran, like truly not the shape of his body, but like his lack of athleticism.
Like as he got doughier.
Yeah. I mean, sort of the same deal. But like really expertly adapted his game to fit, you know, the new paradigm of his athleticism, his dwindling athleticism. I mean, that's like a thing worth noting, you know?
There have been quotes. I think like LeBron James LeBron is now being coached by Jason Kidd. And I remember when Frank Vogel got hired and then Jason Kidd was named an assistant coach and everyone just assumed Jason Kidd would try to steal Frank Vogel's job. So far, we haven't seen any evidence of that. But previously, LeBron James had spoken very glowingly about Jason Kidd. I think like Mike Krzyzewski or someone else, like one of those extremely respected, Greg Popovich, called Kidd basically the smartest basketball player they've ever coached, or one of the smartest basketball players they've ever coached. And if we do remember, go all the way back to when Kidd was first hired, he went straight from being a player to a coach. And it was exciting. And actually, his one season with the Nets was his most successful season as a head coach. It was the most wins he ever had in a single season. Even like they had 44 wins. And that was more than anything that he had in Milwaukee. I mean, he got close. He got up to 42 wins.
But even that was kind of weird because the 44 wins is not an amazing win total or whatever. But think about the hole that they came out of being 10-21. Like the second half of that season after he moves Sean Livingston into the starting lineup and completely like changes the whole identity of the team into this, what we called at the time, long ball, Mike. If you remember, that was a...
That was what we called it.
I believe we trademarked that.
So he that was the first year of our pod, right?
It was. It'll come full circle.
So sad.
It'll really come full circle. It'll be the last year of the pod too. So
yeah.
Spoiler alert.
Good call.
Just kidding, guys. Come on.
But Mike's not. And just so everyone remembers, I mean, that was the KG, Paul Pierce, Brook Lopez, even though Brook got hurt, which actually ignited the team when he got hurt.
Freed up the long ball.
Darren Williams and Joe Johnson. Vegas's preseason line was 52.5 wins. The Nets were on the cover of Sports Illustrated. They were viewed as possibly an oncoming juggernaut in the NBA after, of course, the trade. And they went on to win 44 games. But if you actually look at their expected win-loss, which is just a stat that's based off of like how many points per game do the Nets score and how many points per game do their opponents score in each game that they play, the Nets only should have won 38 games. So they won an extra 6 games, which is a lot, considering they had a negative point differential for the season by like a point and a half, which is a significant amount, actually. It wasn't that good of a team, but they still won 44 games. They still won a playoff series. And during the season, Jason Kidd had a couple of moments. And just to walk down memory lane, why don't we? The thing that ended his term with the Nets was his power play over Billy King to run the personnel department. He wanted to be over Billy King in deciding personnel, which, again, maybe shouldn't be viewed as a negative because it just means that Jason Kidd knew that Billy King shouldn't be running a basketball team, which is something that probably we all kind of knew at the time, but it was just what it is. He had the soda spilling incident, which in the time of COVID would really look like a real bad move.
In COVID?
Trying to spray liquid that was contaminated by someone's mouth all over the floor. I think that's a real no-no. That's a real no-no, Brian.
Yeah. Looking back, that's even worse than we thought originally. Yeah, it's terrible.
But my favorite moment of the Jason Kidd era was his relationship with Lawrence Frank. Lawrence Frank, if we all don't remember, was supposed to be like Kidd's main lieutenant. He was supposed to be the guy who could help kind of teach Kidd the ins and outs of being a head coach while Kidd was still the head coach.
He was the systems guy, and Kidd was the emotional leader, as they had been when Kidd was leading them to championship runs in the early aughts, Mike.
And Lawrence Frank was tasked with really running the defense. And part of the role of running a defense as an assistant coach, which is not uncommon in the NBA, is that Lawrence Frank would call out defensive coverages from the bench to tell the players. And Jason Kidd got increasingly annoyed by Lawrence Frank's increased amount of communication to players during games. And that led to a blow up. And this is reported by The Athletic's David Aldridge. But at the time, he was a columnist at NBA.com. saying there's a huge blow up between Jason Kidd and Lawrence Frank during a practice or a film session, where, and I'm now quoting, where Kidd, according to a source, told Frank, "Sit the bleep down. I'm the coach of this 13-letter word team." 13-letter word, I think we could guess what that would be. "When you're on the bench, don't bleeping move." Lawrence Frank was eventually banished completely from the bench and told to write daily reports, which we still have yet to see what those daily reports were, the scouting reports that Lawrence Frank was doing. Basically, Jason Kidd does not play well with others. My concern, if I'm Sean Marks, is how much faith do I have that Jason Kidd is not just going to try to do the same thing and take my job? And the Nets don't need that all that much. They have Kyrie Irving, Kevin Durant. So Jason Kidd could even feel, I could do the job. I can just sign some role players and this could be my team and I could take care of it. Where that team also was kind of in the same circumstance. So I think it's a similar circumstance. If I'm Sean Marks, I don't hire Jason Kidd. I don't care how much he's respected how much players really look up to him and trust in him. You know, I'm sure Jason Kidd and Kyrie Irving, they could find some kind of common ground on of being a great point guard, and they both understand what other players should be doing on the floor when they're performing at their greatest level.
I'll just even push back on that. I don't even think it's a great fit with Kyrie and Jason, because they do represent kind of different poles of point guarding. So maybe they would beef on that level. I don't know. They could beef.
Yeah. I think the kind of the problem with like great player turned coach is that they get annoyed not with like the best players on the team. They get annoyed with like the role players. So like Jason Kidd could never understand what it's like to be Garrett Temple. Just couldn't get it. Now, he was kind of Garrett Temple at the Jason Kidd was like Garrett Temple at the end of his career when he was just like a 3-point shooter and defensive guard, which Kidd did evolve into. But still, his mind was one of the great point guards of all time, right?
I think that his influence would even then would have been pretty clear eclipse of what Garrett Temple offers, just in an intangible output. No disrespect to Garrett. I mean, we're talking about
shots at Garrett.
No, kind of one of the best shots. I'm saying like that like weird 52 win Knicks team from 2011 or whatever was like mostly because of Jason Kidd, I would say.
Yeah, no, that's true. And so it's like I kind of think Kidd may create a structure where like KD and Kyrie are even at an elevator hierarchy than they would be with a normal coach, because he respects those greats and he will not probably respect tremendously Garrett Temple or, you know, any other role player that this team ends up signing in the situation. And again, I kind of just go back to the central point. If I'm Sean Marks, I don't know if I really want to hire Jason Kidd. Now, it's interesting that his name's included in this list. And I'll tell you why. After a word from Iannocino, I will tell you why I think Jason Kidd is included on this list of possible Nets coaches. So to me, the most interesting line is not just the names who are on this list that Shyam Charani reported: Jason Kidd, Ime Udoka, Ty Lue, Jeff Van Gundy, or Jacques Vaughn. It's this line: Nets owner Joe Tsai wants a full-scale head coaching process to identify the best partner for team ownership, the front office, coaching staff, and players, sources say. It's interesting because rarely do we see the name of an owner included as being sort of like the prominent feature of a head coaching search. Now, every owner would sign off on any head coaching hire. That, of course, that is going to happen. Every owner on every team is involved in that process. That is without a doubt. But it's interesting that Charania put up forward that Joe Tsai wants this full-scale head coaching process. And also, if I'm Jacques Vaughn, I probably see that and I think, I'm not going to get the job. Because if you truly want to have this huge head coaching process to identify the best partner, it's unlikely then that whole process is going to result into, you know what, we kind of like the guy that's doing it now. And also these names on this list are pretty starry. And what these names don't include are coaches who are currently head coaches right now in the NBA who may get fired. And Charani himself even reports that the list could potentially grow as we find out who may become available. And we've already heard reports that Mike D'Antoni, Alvin Gentry, and Brett Brown all may be available. Now, this wasn't in Shams's report, but I would imagine D'Antoni's name would get added to the list. I think Brett Brown has been rumored to be a name that the Nets would consider. And Alvin Gentry, I don't know if the Nets would go after Alvin Gentry after, you know, I think he's a good coach, but apparently it must not be so for the Pelicans to want to get rid of him in year one of Zion when he had Zion for like 10 games, basically. This is a starry list. I mean, it's Jeff Van Gundy is on the list. That feels like an ownership decision too, where like it's a very owner thing to hear a guy on TV and be like, he sounds smart.
You know, Mike,
we should interview that guy.
That's how I can tell. You're just plugged in. Like that's a great take. Because that's exactly right. That, like, especially a name like because it's particularly that age range for where Joe Tsai is, that really hits.
And so Jason Kidd makes sense to me if I'm Joe Tsai, because I mean, I said this on Twitter, and my podcast is more important than my Twitter feed. So I'll say it now right here, Brian, right in front of your face. Everyone who Jason Kidd pissed off with the Nets is not with the team anymore. Mikhail Prokhorov is gone. Billy King is gone. I don't know if Brett Yormark felt any kind of feelings for Jason Kidd, but Brett Yormark's gone. All the leadership that was with the Nets when Jason Kidd was a coach with the Nets is gone or are gone. This is a totally new situation, a totally new team. Jason Kidd still matters, of course, in the Nets franchise. So if I'm Joe Tsai, I think, well, we have a much different situation. I wasn't around when that was happening. it doesn't bother me to the degree that it may bother Mikhail Prokhorov if he was still owner. So Jason Kidd is intriguing to me. And Shams Charania is reporting that Joe Tsai is the guy who wants this full-scale head coaching process. It's not, I'm sure Sean Marks also does, but it feels like Tsai is pressuring Marks, not necessarily not to look at Jacques Vaughn, but to really have a bold, we're going to look at all types of coaches. We got to find the best person for Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, which he should do. It's just it's an interesting sort of vibe that's being emanated out of Brooklyn right now. Any of the other names? I mean, we talk about Ty Lue all the time, Van Gundy. If Jeff Van Gundy was the coach in the Nets, would you be terrified or would that be intriguing?
That would be, I'd be terrified for the future of the franchise as a whole.
I'm one of those people that thinks like a long layoff doesn't rejuvenate you. It just makes you old.
No, it makes you. I will say that of anyone who's like musings and I like a person that goes off script. His off scriptness is so bad. Like there is a vibe, like a crankiness to his criticisms that I just like cannot get behind.
Yeah, it's. I like Jeff Van Gundy still on.
He's funny. He's like a funny guy, but like it's not. I wouldn't want that energy around. I'm surprised. Yeah, I just wouldn't want the energy around. It's too long. Too long on the shelf.
Off the record here, I've been doing a deep dive on Van Gundy's Nets.
Van Gundy's Nets?
To go back
Nets?
To that time, the book on Jeff Van Gundy was that, like he was the hardest worker in the room.
You mean Van Gundy's Knicks?
Oh, Van Gundy's Knicks. Thank you very much. That he was the hardest worker in the room. The team did love him, but the players definitely felt like a breath of fresh air when he resigned from the Knicks because they knew that they didn't have this guy basically riding them the whole time. I mean, Stan Van Gundy, Jeff's brother, also had the similar kind of attitude. Stan, a very good coach, but that was the kind of attitude that he brought to the Magic that he took to the finals, obviously. And like, I don't know if the Nets need film room Jeff Van Gundy, right? I think what they need is Ty Lue, already a champion, seemed focused at this time when he was a Cleveland Cavaliers coach just to ease the locker room. That's what he did. And he spoke specifically about it in interviews with Joe Vardon of The Athletic, that like that's what he did when he tried to go into the team when he took over the Cavs. It's like, I'm going to ease the locker room here and I'm going to try to make everything fit together enough that our talent will be able to override and we'll be able to do what we want to do on the court. I have no sense of Ime Udoka beyond the fact that he's related, not related, he's engaged to Nia Long, who an actress who previously had been on Fresh Prince of Bel-Air as Will Smith's girlfriend. They've been engaged for 10 years. What does that tell you about our boy Ime Udoka? It's interesting.
Well, he weighs his decision carefully. That's what that says to me.
That's a fair take. Yeah. So my overall thing about these names beyond the Jason Kidd
is that Greg Popovich's name isn't among them. And that's a huge problem for
Popovich. Yeah. No, that no names of guys who are currently head coaches are on this list. So that makes me think that Shams is in fact getting the information, not just from agents, but from the Nets, because if agents were telling Shams fully who these names are, and again, just because I work for the company, Shams Charania isn't running reporting through me. So that's not happening. But because these names are of guys who are available, that shows me that he's having some kind of conversation with the Nets in some way, with Sean Marks probably in some way. If there were names like Mike D'Antoni on there, maybe D'Antoni's agent is telling Shams, hey, we know we're going to get fired. Can you please include us in this Nets coaching search? Can we do that? I don't know. It's intriguing. If I had to power rank them, I still don't know if Jacques Vaughn's my number one. I'd probably still put Ty Lue, but Jacques Vaughn has a chance to prove himself in the playoffs.
In these Toronto playoffs. And we'll talk about how Sean Marks said signing Joe Harris priority number one for the offseason on the next episode.
Thank you all for listening. Five stars. We need them. We want to have them.
Glue guys.
Thank you all for listening.
Hey, Mike. Well, thanks for having me on the show.